Today I'm going to be reading from Ruth, chapter 1, 16 to 22. But Ruth replied, "Don't urge me to leave you or to turn back from you. Where you go, I will go, and where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people, and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. May the Lord deal with me, be it ever so severely, if even death separates you and me." When Naomi realized that Ruth was determined to go with her, she stopped urging her. So the two women went on until they came to Bethlehem. When they arrived in Bethlehem, the whole town was stirred because of them, and the women exclaimed, "Can this be Naomi?" "Don't call me Naomi," she said, told them. "Call me Mara, because the Almighty has made my life very bitter. I went away full, but the Lord has brought me back empty. Why call me Naomi? The Lord has afflicted me. The Almighty has brought misfortune upon me." So Naomi returned from Moab, accompanied by Ruth, the Moabite, her daughter-in-law, arriving in Bethlehem as the barley harvest was beginning. This is the word of the Lord.
Good morning, everyone. Rod Dyson's my name, and I'm on the team here, and it's my joy to share with you for these next two Sundays, this Sunday and next Sunday. And we're going to spend 4 weeks looking at the book of Ruth. Now, the book of Ruth has four chapters, so there is no excuse for you not reading it. In fact, I'd urge you to read it several times. And as you do, ask God to speak to you through it. It's a really significant, incredible book, and God will certainly speak to you as you read it. Now, part of my role today is to do an introduction to the book, so I'm probably going to give you a little bit more information than I'd normally want to do in a sermon. So stick with me. I know it's a long weekend, but hang in there, because this is the foundation for the weeks to come. Now, the book of Ruth is placed after the book of Judges in the Bible, and that's because it's written around the same time, set in the same point in history, around about 1300 BC. So it's pretty old. So I guess just as a warning, don't try and approach it as a current day person, but try and listen and understand the culture as I share some of that with you. The two great leaders of the early part of the Bible, Moses and Joshua, have died. So Joshua has just led them into the promised land. He dies, and his generation die. And the next generation have forgotten what God did in bringing the people out of Egypt. So the book of Judges is in quite a chaotic time. And there's a repeated pattern in the book, and it's in some of the books in the Bible too. There may even be a pattern here that's a bit like your life at some times. So this is the pattern. Israel does evil in the sight of God. Well, you might just rewrite that to say you step away from God a bit. Israel does what is evil in the sight of God. The people are given over to the hands of their enemies. The people cry out to God for a new leader. The Spirit of God falls on that new leader. The leader leads them in victory and peace comes on the land, and then they forget again. And you might have had a time where you kind of just drift away a bit, and the things that you are exposed to overtake you because you don't have the presence of God with you to resist them. And then you remember and you pray, and the Spirit comes again, and you go on your journey, and then maybe you forget again. So it's a pattern for all of us. And Judges chapter 2, so right at the beginning, says this: "Then the Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Lord and served the Baals." So they were like male deities or gods. "They forsook the Lord, the God of their ancestors who had brought them out of Egypt. They followed and worshipped various gods of the peoples around about them. They aroused the Lord's anger because they forsook him and served the Baals and the Ashtoreths, which were the female deities. In his anger against Israel, the Lord gave them into the hands of raiders who plundered them. He sold them into the hands of their enemies all around, whom they were no longer able to resist. So that's how it begins. And then the end of the book of Judges says this: in those days, there was no king in Israel, and everyone did just as they saw fit. When I read that, I thought, yeah, it sounds a bit like modern Western culture, doesn't it? In an age of individualism, people can choose to do just what they want to, and often without reference to any greater power. The book of Ruth is a very different book to the book of Judges. Though it's set at the same time, it shows us a different way of relating to God. The key people in this book of Ruth are kind and faithful and loyal, whereas those, and there's a lot in the book of Judges, who are self-serving and violent and idolatrous, worshipping other gods. And even at this time when the nation seems to be set against God, here is the story of the engagement of God with one family. And there's a different relationship to what we see repeated in the book of Judges. So two opening questions for us all. You will have had some difficult circumstances in your life, and I know for some of you those circumstances have been far more grave than for other people. But the question still applies. What role will God have in those awful times in your life? Will God be blamed for them? Or will you go to God seeking God's presence in the midst of those terrible times? What's been your pattern in the past in times of struggle? The book of Ruth will help us to look at this issue and help us answer it. Now, five books in the Old Testament are read on different Jewish holidays. The book of Ruth is one of those. It's read in entirety during the Jewish Festival of Weeks, the Shavuot. This is a festival 50 days after the Passover festival, just as Pentecost is 50 days after Easter. So the Jewish name Shavuot refers to that period of time. And this year, and I don't think it's anything to do with Jonathan's planning, this year, Shavuot is this weekend, from Friday to Sunday, this weekend. That also means today is the day of Pentecost, where we remember the gift of the Spirit to the church. Each year, the Jewish people have this sense that even though they've received the Torah or law before, each year they receive it afresh. It comes new to them. And it's a really helpful understanding because it reminds us that God's word is always a gift to us. And there's always something new to be learned in it. The Bible is never our possession to be controlled. It is always God's gift to us, and God always brings something new to us from it. Likewise, we never control the Spirit because the Spirit blows wherever it will. But there is always something new of God there to lead us on in the next stage in our journey. The Festival of Weeks also includes the bringing of first fruits. And that's why that last verse we read was important, because it's the barley festival. And so because the barley harvest, they're bringing their first fruits to God. That's why Ruth is read at this time. Now let me give you a brief overview of this, of chapter 1. What we're going to try and do is really stick very strongly to the chapters. So I'm just talking about chapter 1, except for one small exception, which I'll tell you about in a while. So the book of Ruth begins with a famine in the promised land. Elimelech and Naomi, who are from Bethlehem in Judea, does that ring a bell for you? They leave the land and go to Moab and remain there. They have two sons, Mahlon and Chilion, and they are effectively refugees in another country. And we've got a map here which shows the journey to and from Moab. Today, Moab would be in the land of Jordan, which we know about Jordan. Now, after a period of time in Moab, tragedy occurs. Elimelech, Naomi's husband, dies. Mahlon and Chilion both marry Moabite women, Orpah and Ruth, and tragedy continues. Mahlon and Chilion are both married for around 10 years. No children result. We'll get back to that. And then they both die. It's a pretty sad story. Naomi then hears, and I quote, that the Lord has come to the aid of his people by providing food for them. So Naomi and her two daughters-in-law start to return from Moab towards Bethlehem. As they set off, Naomi says to them, "Don't come with me. You'll have no future and you'll have no chance of finding a husband and having children. So go home. Go to Moab and stay there." There's an argument. Orpah decides to go back, but Ruth continues with Naomi and with these well-known words, "Don't urge me to leave you or to turn back from you. Where you go, I'll go, and where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people, your God will be my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried." So Naomi relents, and the two of them go to Bethlehem. And then on arriving in Bethlehem, there's a bit of a stir. And we sometimes read that where Jesus goes to a particular place. There's a bit of a stir as people realise that Naomi has come there. Now, there's some funny things in the book of Ruth, and I want to share a couple of them with you. Firstly, God was regarded as really territorial at the time Ruth was written. That means that our God was in Israel, but not in Moab. There was a different God there, the God of the Moabites. Did Elimelech do the right thing in leaving Israel, even in a time of drought, going to where there was another God? Clearly, other people stayed in Bethlehem. Did Elimelech's faith lessen? Why does his two sons have Canaanite names, not Jewish names? Did the sons do the right thing in marrying Moabite women? It's most unusual. Marriage between Jew and non-Jew was both forbidden, but also not counted as a marriage, particularly for Moab, because when Israel arrived at the Promised Land, the Moabites refused to support them. There's a history. I wonder whether this first part of the story is a parable of Israel and what happens when you go away from God. Does this part of the story reflect what happened in the book of Judges when people leave God and do their own thing? Does the rest of Ruth therefore give us a choice of how to behave differently? Having said all that, I'm not criticising these people. If you imagine that you were in Bethlehem, Bethlehem means house of bread. If you're in Bethlehem and there is no bread and you have children, what would you do? Would you really stay there, or would you go searching for it and become a refugee? Big questions that are raised in this book. So let me move on to some critical aspects in the book of Ruth that will play out over the weeks to come. The first one is the role of women. To understand Ruth, you need to be clear about the role of women in this book at this time of Ruth. And I found some work by Carolyn Curtis James really helpful. She's both a sociologist, so she understands how things are structured, but she's a biblical scholar as well. And she's done a lot of work on what it means to be a female follower of Jesus in a postmodern world now. So if you're a woman and you particularly want to engage with that topic, look her up, and you'll find some incredibly helpful stuff written for all of us. She's written a book about Ruth called Finding God at the Margins, and I found it really helpful to read some of that. Carolyn says that the place of women at the time of Ruth depended totally on being married and having sons. That's how it was then. A really feared outcome was that the family name would cease, and it would cease if there were no sons to carry it forward. So Carolyn says that since Elimelech has died and both of her sons have died, Naomi is effectively at zero in her society. She has zero standing. A quote I heard when I was researching this is that it was often said that women effectively died on the day their husbands died. Can you hear the gravity of that? That's how it was. Brides became the property of their husband's family. So this is the only reference in chapter 2. So when Ruth appears, Boaz says, "To whom does this young woman belong? Hear that? That's a possession term. She would belong to a father, a husband, a brother, or a master. She is not a person in her own right. It's not like now. Now, I'm not suggesting in any way that the place of women and men in our society is equal. It is clearly not, especially not equal to white men. And even during the week, there was a report from the New South Wales Police Department that said that 1/3 of women police officers in New South Wales have been sexually harassed. That is not equality. Nowhere near. But now, women can have a career. They can have their own property. And they can benefit as a widow from their husband's life insurance and superannuation. A woman can be independently wealthy. Forgot any of those? We'd always have projects for people who are independently wealthy. Anyway, that wasn't so then. No way. Now, she goes on further to talk about Ruth, and she said if Naomi is zero, Ruth is sub-zero. Sub-zero. Hear that? No standing whatsoever. She's a widow, and since she's been married for 10 years and not had any children, people would think that she couldn't have sons. She was also a foreigner. She's a Moabite. So she's outside of the people of God, below zero. This is a society that we would describe as patriarchal. In other words, descent occurs through the male line and males hold the power. Women were largely excluded from power. So when we see Ruth and Naomi playing a major role in this book, we need to sit up and take notice. Something amazing is happening here. Something really radical is happening. What we're seeing is something of the character of God who says men and women are equal and equally loved. This is partly what this book is telling us. In the book of Ruth, the actions of God are not on the battlefield, in palaces, in temples, or in the lives of powerful leaders. Rather, we see God working a lot in the lives of women, and indeed women who, according to that culture, have no hope, even a woman who's not part of the people of God. This is an extraordinary book. So what happens in the book of Ruth can only be understood as an action of God. So look and listen for it. Now, on Good Friday, I spoke about an Old Testament concept called chesed. It's God's faithful love that continues even in the face of disobedience, disloyalty, and suffering. And it's really strong in the Old Testament. And we would see that kind of perfectly completed in the person of Jesus Christ and Jesus' grace. It's important in the book of Ruth too. So Naomi and Ruth arrive back in Bethlehem. And Naomi says, "Don't call me Naomi. Call me Mara, because the Almighty has made my life very bitter. I went away full, but the Lord has brought me back empty. Why call me Naomi? The Lord has afflicted me. The Almighty has brought misfortune upon me." Naomi means pleasant. Mara means bitter. It's a terribly sad story. And we must never diminish the suffering that is in this book. Naomi's experience has been a bitter one, and she identifies God as the cause. She does not say she is bitter toward God, but that her life is bitter. Her sense is, I think, that God's faithful love, God's chesed, has departed from her. So there is a strong sense of there being no future. Now, Naomi went away full and has come back empty. She seems to believe she has no future. Maybe you've felt like that too. At some stage in your life, you might have thought, well, where do I go with this? Why can I not see God? One of the commentaries I read by David Jackman, titled The Preacher's Commentary on Judges and Ruth, tells a story where David the writer was a young minister. He's called to visit a man in his late 60s whose wife has just died suddenly. The man had served with distinction in the Royal Air Force during the Second World War, from which he suffered permanent invalidity. Now, he was a strong man, a tough man, a soldier, But when David visited him, he was howling inconsolably. He and his wife had been married for 6 weeks, and they'd never been married before. So they'd both found this new beginning and had been brought to nothing. And this man was just saying over and over again, why has God done this to me? Have you ever said that? I imagine some of you have. Now, David had not been trained in dealing with these things, and I think all of us who have training, we think, oh, God, I wish they'd train me in this. He knew the situation couldn't be fixed. No trite statements would help. He knew that even a theological comment about God probably couldn't be received because of the great sadness. It would have just had a hollow ring. He also felt really uncomfortable with total silence. But he did sit in silence for a while, and he prayed, God, speak with me. Show me what to do. And he felt God say to him, read the scriptures. Well, he couldn't quite do what he was supposed to do, and he had to make a few comments about God. But then he read the scriptures. And so he read from the book of Psalms, and you know about the Psalms. They're full of the reality of life, the struggle, the pain, the suffering, the loss, the hopelessness. But they also talk about discovering God again. And they often talk about it, not by fixing what was wrong. And it wasn't going to be fixed, was it? She was dead. She wasn't coming back. He said that he read the Psalms for about 15 minutes, during which time he thought the man probably didn't hear anything because he was just sobbing so loudly. But then he stopped. He sat still and looked up and began to deeply hear what was being read. He said it was like suddenly he was sitting at the feet of Jesus and in his right mind. He said, I was reminded that when we read the scriptures and we read them with an open heart and mind, we can encounter the presence of the living God, even in the worst circumstances of life. So Naomi's life is like one of those psalms. Her suffering is palpable, yet she doesn't criticise God, even as she says God has dealt harshly with her. For her, God is still God. Naomi still sees her life as in God's hands. She responds to her circumstances with acceptance and trust, but not blame. It's extraordinary, even for a person of faith. And you may well know someone who's done that. Someone whose suffering's been so tangible, but they never question the presence of God in their lives. At this stage in the book of Ruth, it's a bit like Good Friday, and there's no sign of the resurrection. And yet, an amazing thing happens. Even though there's such sadness and loss, Ruth sees something in Naomi, and she says, your people will be my people, and your God will be my God. Something was still there. And Ruth makes this radical decision. The decision means that she must leave the God of Moab. She must leave her family and probably never see them again. And she's probably also giving up the right to be married and to have sons, because she'll always be a foreigner. She does this because of what she sees in Naomi. Now, in today's sermon, I am not going to resolve that suffering, because that doesn't happen in chapter 1. So we're going to sit with Good Friday until next Sunday. And then maybe, I'm not giving anything away, but I want to leave you some questions. Where will you turn when your life is unbearably difficult? What do you do when it seems like the door to life is slammed shut, where you cannot open it? Where will you go? Now, one option is to remain bitter and blame God and be trapped in that. And I stress the word remain, because blame and anger and even bitterness can be part of the process of grief. Another option would be to name the terrible circumstances. I am empty, God. I had something and it's gone. I am empty. And to invite God into those terrible circumstances. Even then, will the time agenda that you set around God doing something be yours? Would you be willing to let God set the time frame, even if it was a long one? Would you be willing to sit with that? To some extent, we're the product of all the things that have happened to us, but maybe even more so, we're the product of how we respond to those events. So maybe the most provocative question I would have for you is this. Will there be something about the sad and broken times in your lives that draw others to follow Jesus? Over the next 3 weeks, we'll look at the responses of Naomi and Ruth and Boaz and places where the chesed, the loving faithfulness of God, may just be found. So we're about to sing a song. Now, as much as I would have liked it, the person who wrote this song didn't write it for my sermon. So it doesn't totally fit. Now, in this song, it talks about the deep struggles we have being about our sin, our brokenness, and sometimes it can be, but it's not always so. Sometimes it's about the brokenness in the wider world and society. Sometimes it's just about the fact that we live and we die, that people are unfaithful, etc. So within the limitations of the lyrics of this song, I invite you to come within the open arms of God.